and welcome to It's All About Food. This is a live call-in show. You can call in with questions at 1-888-873-4643. That's 1-888-873-4643. So I'm on the list of a lot of different organizations' newsletters, and I got one today, and I wanted to share the information. It's actually from a site about beef production, and they said that there appears to be a 3.2% fall in beef production between January and September. So they're rather sad about that, but I think it's great news. And in Argentina, they've had a drought for the last 3 years, and as a result, their beef production has dropped by 15%. Okay. And perhaps you've heard about Jonathan Safran Foer. He's a young author, best-selling author. One of his books was made into a movie, Everything is Illuminated. Really wonderful film and wonderful movie. And he's the talk of the town right now on a lot of chat shows, and a lot of newspapers and magazines are interviewing him because he put out a book called Eating Animals. And he's talking about what we talk about every week, how it's all about food and about factory farming. And he'll be on the show in a couple of weeks on November 25th, so I'm very excited about that. But right now we have a special guest, Nathan Runkle, who is the founder of Mercy for Animals. And we're going to hear a lot about him, but he's one of the vegetarian movement's superheroes and has been called one of the 25 most fascinating vegetarians, one of the country's top 20 activists under 30 years old. And we're going to hear a lot from him. I welcome Nathan. Are you with me?
I sure am. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So I just want to get started. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about. What I like to do with my guests is first find out how you got on the path that you're on today. So I understand you were raised on a farm in Ohio.
Yes.
And
yeah,
what happened?
Well, I grew up on a farm in rural Ohio and was really surrounded by all types of animals from the very first day. And I always had a natural interest and affinity towards animals. I found them very fascinating, and learned a lot from our family's dogs and cats about the needs and interests, curiosity, intelligence that all animals share. So it was really these animals through childhood that taught me that animals are much like us and have many of the same needs and desires.
These animals were raised for food?
These were mainly our dogs and cats that I really formed relationships with. Mm. Most of the farm was raising feed for livestock, but we weren't really in the business of raising livestock. Many of our neighbors were, so it's something that I was very familiar with from a very young age. But I witnessed a lot of animal cruelty growing up, not only to farm animals, but also to wild animals as well. Both of my uncles were hunters and trappers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going on hunting trips with them when I was younger and seeing just the absolute terror and fear in these animals' eyes after they had been shot. Mm-hmm. And from a very young age, it just always struck me as unnecessary and as cruel, and that these animals had the same spark for life that I did. So I think that from a young age, this is something that was naturally within me, and I think that's true with most children as a natural.
Right. Were you encouraged to hunt with your uncles?
Yeah, I was. You know, it was something that most children in the rural environments were. It was something that was sort of expected.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, it was something that was sort of always within me, but when I was 11 years old, I went to a mall for an Earth Day event, and there was a booth set up by a local animal protection organization, and they had literature on factory farms, and that was the first time that I heard about the confinement systems of how these animals are raised. And it was also the first time that I heard of animal activists and people that were taking these natural feelings that I had and really acting on behalf of them. And a light bulb went off, and I essentially started my journey towards becoming a vegetarian.
Right, at 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, there's two ways to look at it. You know, one, I'm always frustrated because I want things to happen so quickly, and I want all of this pain and suffering to go away, and I want animals to be able to live the life that they're meant to live and not be confined and raise their families and have fresh air et cetera. So on one hand, it's taken a long time because I got on this path about 36 years ago, and it just seems so slow. And yet, on the other hand, a lot's happened in two decades, and now, there's so much happening, and, you know, kids can go into malls and get the information like you did, and there are so many foods available in the supermarket so that are vegetarian and vegan. People know the word vegan now. The celebrities are starting to talk about it. You hear more about it on mainstream chat shows and in movies, and so there's a lot more happening. I'm very encouraged, but certainly would like this problem solved today.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you really hit the nail on the head. There, I think, just in the past 5 years has been more progress and awareness regarding farm animal issues than all 25, 30 years before then. And I think they talk about tipping points, and I think that we're really running sort of towards that tipping point now with, as you said, the mainstream media coverage of these issues and the vegetarian food market just skyrocketing. It's never been easier or more convenient to adopt a compassionate diet, and it's never been more mainstream or accepted. And certainly with the internet now, the ability for people to receive information about these issues has certainly helped open a lot of people's hearts and minds to farm animals.
So you were 11 years old and you got exposed to animal advocacy. And then when did you decide to start Mercy for Animals or start your own group?
Well, really, from that moment on, I knew that this was something that I was passionate about and wanted to do, to take action for these animals. And at 11 years old, I started circulating petitions at my school. You know, nothing too overly organized, but sitting and doing nothing and standing idly by wasn't really an option for me even at that young age.
Mm.
But Mercy for Animals came about 4 years later. There was a local animal abuse case at a high school that my sister was a student at, and it involved an agricultural teacher who was also a pig farmer bringing to school a bucket of day-old piglets to be used in a dissection project for the class. And these were baby piglets that he had tried to kill that morning on his farm. When he arrived to the school with these animals, one of them was still alive. So she, one of the students who also did some part-time work on this teacher's pig farm, proceeded to take the piglet by her hind legs and slam her head first into the concrete floor.
Mm-hmm.
In front of all of the students in this agricultural class, and understandably, some of the students were just absolutely appalled by this. And even after this violent assault on this piglet, she was still alive, but now her skull was broken. She was bleeding out of her mouth, just in a really horrible, painful condition. So two of these sympathetic students grabbed the piglet, left the classroom, and alerted another teacher at the school who was known as being a vegetarian and sympathetic to animal suffering. She took this dying piglet out of the school, went to a local veterinarian, and had the animal euthanized because they just simply couldn't do anything to help her at this point. And this teacher contacted an animal protection organization to get animal cruelty charges filed against the student and the teacher that were involved in this horrific act. And charges were filed and it went to court, and the local pig farming and pork producing community rallied behind the student and the teacher.
Sure.
And the very first day of the trial, all of the cruelty charges were dismissed because it's considered standard agricultural practice to kill piglets in this manner.
Right, it's, and feed animals that are raised for food are not protected.
Right, exactly. So this case illustrated the common farming exemptions, which are about 30 states have exemptions written into their state anti-cruelty statutes, which allow for essentially any abusive practice to take place against a farm animal as long as it's done to a large number of animals and it's considered standard. And this form of killing piglets called stumping or blunt head trauma is accepted. So this case highlighted the need for us to start an organization in rural Ohio that would be a voice for farm animals, and Mercy for Animals grew out of that.
Wow. And it's grown very quickly in a short amount of time.
Yeah, we now have offices in Chicago, in New York City, Asheville, North Carolina, and Columbus, Ohio. And we have members nationwide, and many of our campaigns have a national and sometimes even international reach.
So one of the things you do is investigative reporting.
Yeah.
And then there have been some films that have come out showing what goes on in some of the farms. How do you accomplish some of that?
Yeah, the undercover investigations are really the backbone and the lifeblood of our campaigns and our work to expose farm animal cruelty, but also to promote compassionate eating choices and to protect these animals. And we have a small team of investigators that roll up their sleeves and do the really dirty, painful work of gaining employment inside of factory farms and slaughterhouses, hatcheries, and working for months on end, side by side with other people on the slaughter line and inside of these factory farms. And they wear pinhole-sized hidden cameras to work and document the daily abuse that these animals are subjected to. And without exception, every single time that they enter one of these facilities, they emerge with startling footage of rampant abuse. And much of it is completely standard and acceptable within these industries. So we take this footage and we work to expose this abuse to as many people as possible through media outlets, through news stories, through documentaries, through our website. And the response from people has been just, people are shocked and appalled by this, but people have no idea that it's going on. And I think that most people are very compassionate for animals, and they certainly wouldn't support the violence and the cruelty of the meat, dairy, and egg industries if they really knew what was going on.
Well, first, these people that are doing the work, I give them a lot of credit because, you know, I have a hard enough time looking at some of this footage, and so to be surrounded by it day in and day out just to get it is, I don't even know how they could do it. You know, because my understanding of these places, not only is the abuse to animals just unimaginable, but the atmosphere, the smells are horrific, the sounds are horrific. I mean, it gets to all of your senses. So I just don't know how these people do it. And then are any of the farms getting hip to some of this going on? I mean, is it easy to get a job with one of these places? I recently read Stephen Wise's book on the American Trilogy. I don't know if you've read it, but he talks about the pig farms in North Carolina, and he certainly couldn't get access or interviews with any of these farms. They make it very difficult.
Yes, it is a difficult job, not only on a physical and emotional level, but it also just on a practical level, it can be difficult to gain access to these facilities. And certainly our investigators are hired to work there. They certainly don't know that these are investigators that they're hiring. But the industry is certainly taking notice of these investigations because they are so damaging to the meat, dairy, and egg industries, and they don't want their dirty secrets broadcast on the evening news of how these animals are confined to the point where they can't even turn around, how they're mutilated without painkillers. So it's something that is difficult, but it's important work, and we're dedicated to seeing it through.
Do any of these people need to have special care when they leave these farms to kind of get the, I don't know, somewhat like the psychological care that's needed, that soldiers need when they leave a war scene?
Yeah, this work certainly takes its toll, and we do our best to work with our investigators to sort of emotionally deal with what they're seeing and what they're having to take part in every day. And these are people that care about animals just as much as we do, but they see the value and the necessity in doing this work. So it also shines a light on the conditions for the workers that are there day in and day out. And oftentimes, you know, I think that these workers are victims themselves, and many of them are undocumented workers who don't have many other choices for employment, and these industries really abuse and exploit them as well.
Well, if anybody's seen the movie Food Inc., which got a lot of press for a while, there's a scene in there where you see these illegal aliens that were actually brought to work at a factory farm, and then when the government got involved because there were some violations, they arrested the workers and kind of let the corporations go free. And, it was really heart-wrenching. I mean, first of all, they're in these horrible jobs with horrible conditions, and then they end up getting arrested.
Yeah, it's an out-of-control system and industry, and it's the corporations that really are the ones that need to be held accountable and responsible for what's taking place.
So what I'm thinking is that it's going to take some time before we turn this around, but I'm really hopeful for lots of reasons. And one is the Earth cannot sustain this type of activity. And we recently read from World Watch magazine that 51% of human-induced greenhouse gas emissions is caused by animal agriculture. I say that every week now on my show because animal agriculture is now obviously the major cause of global warming. And so cruelty aside, the Earth can't sustain it. And so at some point we're going to have to be vegan by necessity. And but all of that aside,
you're absolutely right. I mean, the cruelty to animals is certainly the driving force behind our work. And we're talking about over 9 billion land animals being killed simply for food in the United States every single year. Once you start looking at the number of aquatic animals that are killed, we're talking about 27 billion animals or more. And all of these animals have to eat, and it's just an extremely inefficient use of our Earth's limited resources, both water and land and grain. And as you said, it's simply something that we cannot sustain. So,
right.
The
so
most
I'm not sure
diet.
When it's all going to happen, you know, if we're going to see some drastic change in 5 years, or if it's going to take, you know, a couple of decades or half a century. And I frankly don't know how much time we have. There's certainly different estimates from different scientists. Some of them are very terrifying, and some of them give us a little more time. But what I see is the younger generations are more interested in making change than the older folks. You know, they always say it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks, and I don't believe that. I mean, I know that there are lots of older people that have made changes, especially when they realize what's going on. But I see, you know, I know you give talks to different people, different groups of people, and I find there seems to be two different groups of younger people. There are the ones that are really moved by this information and want to make a difference and want to make changes. And then there's another group that just seem very numb and very, they just don't care. Have you dealt with that group, and what have you done with them?
We do a lot of outreach to youth because obviously these are people that are not only the food purchasers of today, but also hold really the longest term buying power and shaping the world and how our food is going to be produced and ultimately how these animals are going to be treated. And the young people are also very open-minded and very receptive to these issues. So we do commercials on MTV stations. We do a lot of humane education work inside of high schools and colleges. We distribute literature on college campuses and inside of high schools. And by and large, the response is extremely positive. So I think the number of young people that are apathetic to this issue is really the minority. I think the majority of young individuals see this problem as it is, which is just completely unacceptable and something that we need to address. And the treatment of farm animals as it currently is not something that any civilized society should be tolerating. So I have a lot of hope for the future based on that. The individuals that are apathetic, I can't really speak to why I think that is, because I think it probably varies, but I think that deep down inside of everyone is this basic good and decency and the desire to do right and to treat others fairly. And for some people, young or old, who may at first appear apathetic to these issues, I think it's a matter of inspiring them and letting them know that we can and we must do better. And I think that everyone holds that power and that potential for change. And there are a number of stories of people that have worked in slaughterhouses for decades or used to be cattle ranchers themselves who are now vegan animal rights activists. Somebody that comes to mind is Virgil Butler, who worked for almost 10 years at a Tyson slaughter plant in Arkansas. And Virgil put millions of birds literally on shackles and sent them off to have their throats slit. But one day the light bulb went on for him, and he decided that he was no longer going to take part in this abuse, and he started blogging about the daily abuses that he had witnessed and became an outspoken advocate on behalf of animals. So I think that everyone has that potential, and anyone that advocates on behalf of these issues, I think, has to truly believe in that basic human decency that we all share.
Well, that's beautiful, and I want to believe it too. Some of the difficulties, I think, that are not necessarily connected to the animal movement, but there's so much violence in movies, on television, and in the news reports, and people are really numbed to violence, not just to animals, but to human beings, and they kind of accept it as a status quo. And then there's a lot of people in poor areas and even low to middle class that don't have access to quality food. And, you know, the dollar meal at McDonald's is easy and it's quick, and they may know about all the stuff, but some people may be in college on a limited budget, and that's what they go for. So I agree that deep down I think we all have the potential to make this place a better world, and that's what we need to be nurturing and figure out ways to trigger that part in all of us. So I'm speaking with Nathan Runkle, the founder of Mercy for Animals, and you can get more information about Mercy for Animals at the website mercyforanimals.org. What are some of the projects that you're working on now?
Well, our primary focus is working to protect farm animals and promote humane food choices, which is a vegan diet, and we do that in a number of ways. As we talked about earlier, our undercover investigations are a leading force in our efforts to bring about that change that we so desperately need. But we also do a lot of grassroots outreach events, so talking in schools across the country with our humane educators. We have a vegetarian dining campaign that works to work with local restaurants to broaden and expand their offering of plant-based foods and promote these establishments to diners that are seeking out these options. We have ad campaigns that promote compassion for farm animals and expose factory farms. We just had 15 billboards go up in the Denver area. We'll be doing an extensive campaign in Boston next month. Wow. And these campaigns are opening the hearts and minds of literally tens of millions of people. And we also have a new documentary. It's called Foul Play, and it's F-O-W-L, and it's a no-holds-bar look inside the American egg industry. And this is a film that has been accepted into over a dozen film festivals nationwide. It's won a number of awards, and it features interviews with veterinarians, animal behaviorists, undercover investigators, animal rescuers. It profiles a vegan family, interviews with students and young people, and it really takes viewers behind the closed doors of our nation's egg factory farms, where 5 to 7 birds are crowded inside of tiny wire cages the size of a file drawer cabinet, unable to spread their wings or walk freely. And this is how they live for up to 2 years before they're killed. This is probably the most abusive industry on the face of the planet. And eggs, certainly calorie per calorie, is probably the cruelest food that we could consume, especially if it's coming from a hen kept in one of these battery cages. So this film is really exposing many consumers for the first time to the power and consequences of their food choices. And listeners can go to foulplaymovie.com and view scenes from the film. They can order the DVD there. And we hope that this is a film that people will share with others, and we can start the dialogue and work that needs to be done to protect these animals, which are really often forgotten.
Now, most people have no idea when they have an egg how it's connected to cruelty, you know. And if anybody has an idea about factory farming, they rarely make the connection between dairy and eggs because they think the animals aren't killed. And so it's really important to get this information out because, as you said, it's probably one of the worst industries.
Yep.
In terms of cruelty.
Absolutely. People think that eggs are an innocent byproduct of chickens and that these animals are just running around out in the open pastures and going back to the big red barn at night, but that's not the case at all. In fact, 95% of the eggs in supermarket stores come from birds that are kept in these battery cages, which are lined up in rows, stacked on top of each other inside of huge windowless warehouses where the birds can't even spread their wings. They can't walk. They can't perch. They can't roost. They can't engage in hardly any natural behaviors. And when their egg production declines, which is after about 2 years of age, they're simply killed. They're disposed of.
Right, chicken soup.
Yeah, they're ripped out of their cages by their fragile wings, and many of them now are just thrown into kill carts and gassed with CO2, which is extremely painful. Mm. And the beginning part of this cycle, which our most recent undercover investigation shined a light on, is what happens to all of the male chicks at these facilities. And
right.
Males, of course, do not lay eggs, and the egg-laying breed they will not grow large or fast enough to be raised profitably for meat, so they're deemed a byproduct by the egg industry, so they're disposed of within the first few days of hatching. And our investigation at the world's largest hatchery for egg-laying breed chickens found that these male chicks are thrown into grinding machines while they're still alive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is the fate of over 200 million chicks every single year that are males. So it is a very cruel industry, and most consumers are just completely in the dark about what's taking place. And a lot of that is because of the marketing of on egg cartons and by the egg industry. We still
yeah.
see this imagery of free-roaming chickens with the big red barn in the background on egg cartons from hens that never even touched the ground, never even saw sunlight. So
I want to talk about those egg cartons because
yeah.
some people that are aware of this, still want to eat eggs, and so they buy eggs that they think are cruelty-free. And are they, in a lot of cases, they're being fooled.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of labels that are thrown around regarding eggs. The most common is United Egg Producer Certified. You'll see this label on about 90% of eggs in the supermarkets. And this label is slapped on egg cartons that come from producers that keep birds in tiny cages where they can't even spread their wings. If you see the United
what
Egg
certification
Producers Certified.
Is this? United what?
It's United Egg Producers Certified.
United Egg Producers. Mm-hmm.
United Egg Producers is a trade organization that represents 90% of egg factory farmers, essentially. It's their,
mm-hmm.
PR organization to a large extent. So if you see that label on egg cartons, that is essentially a mark of cruelty. Some of the other labels that you'll see are cage-free and free-range. And this means that the birds aren't kept in cages necessarily, but oftentimes with cage-free facilities, there'll be tens of thousands of birds packed into windowless wet metal warehouses, where these birds are very intensively confined to the point that they cannot engage in many of their natural behaviors as well. They're not given access to the outdoors. The male chicks are still killed because they're not profitable, and the birds have their beaks seared back with a hot blade to prevent them from pecking the other birds because of the overcrowded conditions. So cage-free does not mean cruelty-free, so buyer beware.
Yeah, I think that's the one that's really fooling a lot of people, the ones that are somewhat familiar with what's going on and they think they're doing something good, and they see those types of words on the box and they buy them for that, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, the best thing that we can do is to just eliminate eggs from our diet, and it's so simple, it's so easy. People can go to our website, chooseveg.com, and we have a video on cooking without eggs. It goes over 5 or 6 different alternatives for baking, for substitutes for one egg, such as half of a banana or using mashed silken tofu or applesauce or water and vinegar, different alternatives that you can
brown
take.
Brown flax seeds, that's my favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. That's covered as well. There's so many alternatives out there that are healthy, that are quick, that are easy, and you can take any of your favorite recipes and modify them. We really encourage people to explore those options.
Well, I love talking about food, especially cruelty-free, healthy food, and there's so many amazing things you can do with tofu today to make it look and feel like eggs if you really have this egg craving. And tofu scramble is really easy. There are lots of recipes for that, and a little dash of turmeric makes it yellow and it looks like scrambled eggs. And I've almost got it down, but I've been working on my omelet, and like a gluten-free, flour-free omelet. And it takes a little longer to cook than an egg, but looks and tastes and feels like an egg if you have that desire. Actually, it doesn't exactly taste like an egg. It doesn't have that horrible sulfur smell and flavor that eggs come with. So I think it's better. Oh, dear. So do you get, when you go into schools, are they generally receptive? Have you had any issues with parents complaining about the information their kids come home with?
Every once in a while we'll get complaints, but by and large it's extremely positive. The students are very engaged. They're very interested in these issues, and they want to know the truth. They feel betrayed and deceived that they have been receiving such faulty information through the ad campaigns of the meat, dairy, and egg industries. And when they are confronted and come face to face with the manner in which these animals live and die, they are appalled and they don't want to take part in it. They want to remove their support. So it's talking to students is so rewarding, and it certainly gives us hope for the future.
Okay, let's look at best case scenario. Let's say everybody gets it, and they want to transition to a vegan diet, and How do you see, I don't know if you've given it any thought, but transitioning from animal agriculture, the factory farms that we have today, to a more peaceful type of agriculture?
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it's a big industry.
Certainly, yeah, it is a big industry. And the reality is that we're not going to wake up tomorrow, unfortunately, and have a vegan world. It's something that will, I think, gradually happen over time and throughout, over a course of generations. And as that demand shifts towards healthy and humane and sustainable agriculture, we're going to see that these factory farms and slaughterhouses start to dwindle and are replaced by other forms of food production. People will always need to eat and will certainly always need agriculture. So the need for jobs and the economy will continue to thrive because the shift will take place from cruel and violent food sources to compassionate and sustainable ones. So it's something that I think we're already starting to see with the growth in the prepared food vegetarian market with soy milk and hot dogs. But also it's a simple matter of supply and demand, and as supply or as demand shifts, supply does as well, and that will happen. And as the demand for these animal products decrease, the number of animals being raised and killed will decrease. And currently these animals they're almost Frankenstein animals, the way in which they have been genetically manipulated to grow so large and so fast. We see that modern day turkeys can't even reproduce naturally because they've been bred to have so much breast meat. So we hope that we can do away with these really inherently cruel systems.
Yeah, people have no idea, especially with Thanksgiving coming closer, what their Thanksgiving turkeys really look like, how they're nothing like a turkey in the wild. They can't walk. And it's just really horrific. And here we are having a holiday where we're being thankful for everything that we have, and yet we put this abused, exploited life as our centerpiece. It's really quite ironic.
Absolutely. We did an undercover investigation a few years ago in North Carolina at a turkey slaughterhouse and documented what the final moments of life are like for these birds. And you're absolutely right. The University of Arkansas said that if we grew as fast as a modern-day chicken and turkey, we would weigh over 360 pounds by the age of three. And that really puts into perspective the unnatural rate of growth that these animals experience. And they suffer from crippling leg deformities, heart and lung problems, all of the problems that we associate with obesity. And they, about 90% of the birds that are sent to slaughter have some sort of problem walking because of the unnatural growth rate. And when it comes to the slaughterhouse, what we found at the facility that we investigated is that these birds are painfully ripped out of their crates by their legs, and they're snapped into these moving shackles, which results in broken bones for these birds, dislocated joints. They go through the process fully conscious, kicking and screaming. They have their throats slit with a spinning blade. Mm-hmm. Some of them are not unconscious by the time that they hit the scalding tank. And the whole process is just completely violent. And like you said, what can we be thankful for when a creature has lived a life filled with nothing but pain and suffering? And there are so many alternatives now with tofurkey and Gardein products on the market, and just a whole host of plant-based foods that we can enjoy, that there's really no need.
There's no need for a turkey.
Right.
I want to get back to that in a minute, but you know, you mentioned this image of what we do to chickens with the growth hormones and the fast rate of growth. It's like a baby going to, 360 pounds in 3 months or something?
In 3 years, yeah.
3 years, okay. And, you know, that seems really horrific, but, you know, we're going in that direction. certainly there's more obesity in children now than ever before. And so we're starting to, in some ways, emulate what we're doing in factory farms with ourselves. You know, the chickens and the turkeys that are raised have so much osteoporosis. You know, their bones are weakening, and we're seeing more and more osteoporosis in ourselves. So there's some sort of unfortunate correlation with what we're doing to animals. We're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah, one of the biggest issues with egg-laying breed chickens is that they have been genetically manipulated to lay an unnatural quantity of eggs. Now, if you look at the jungle fowl of Southeast Asia, which is the ancestors of the modern day chickens, which are used for food production, those birds would lay only about 24 eggs every year in their natural setting. Now, in the 1950s, we had genetically manipulated chickens to produce about 100 eggs per year. And now today, over 50 years later, we have over doubled that to over 200 eggs per year. Mm-hmm. So almost 10 times what they once laid in nature. And what this means is that the birds, a lot of their calcium is going into producing all of these eggs, and that results in osteoporosis and broken bones and all sorts of other health problems.
It's just bad, 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 all around bad.
Absolutely. It is. There's the only people that are benefiting from the systems are the corporations themselves, and obviously their bottom line is profit, and animal welfare and protection falls to the wayside, and the environment falls to the wayside, and consumer health falls to the wayside. And we're seeing the ramifications of this out-of-control system with little regard for the environment and for consumers and for animals taking a toll on everyone involved.
Now, we have India and China that are getting more and more attention today in the news and in our economy because they're growing at an incredible rate, and they're acquiring a taste for everything that we have in the United States in terms of technology and food choices, and they're adopting more and more our sad standard American diet. And so the amount of meat is anticipated, the production of meat is anticipated to grow at really alarming rates because of India and China in particular. Are you doing anything with people in those countries? Any work going on to kind of teach them not to do our mistakes?
The short answer is not yet. Mercy for Animals is still a relatively small organization, and there's certainly so many battles to be had in regards to farm animal issues. But you're right. We're seeing obesity and heart disease and all the human health problems which plague our country that can be so closely associated to a diet that's heavy in animal products, spreading to China and to India as well with the growth of fast food restaurants there. But also factory farm systems follow. And the hatchery investigation that we did at Highline highlighted that, and it gained international media coverage. And many of the countries where these systems are starting to sprout up covered this investigation and did shine a light on that in those countries. And consumers there were just as appalled as those in the United States. So the meat, dairy, and egg industry certainly view these other countries as ripe for the picking and ideal places to expand their market. And unfortunately, many of these countries have even weaker farm animal protection laws than we do in the U.S., or no laws at all, which means that the cruel and inherently inhumane factory farm and slaughter systems that are being used here are not only going to be recreated there, but could potentially be even more horrific for the animals involved. So it's a serious problem, and we certainly hope to have the resources to address that more in the future.
Now, different people are attracted to vegetarian diets for different reasons. Certainly there's the cruelty to animals, which we've talked a bit about, and then there are the health reasons, and then there are the environmental reasons. Your focus is primarily on the treatment of animals, with mercy
Correct.
For animals.
Absolutely, yeah.
But certainly all the other arguments just strengthen your message. Because at this point, there's so much evidence that eating a plant-based diet is the best thing for our health, the best thing for the environment, and certainly the best thing for the animals. Fortunately, it's a win-win-win all the way. In fact, I have yet to find a reason not to eat a plant-based diet, although some people will talk about how they have their desires to eat meat.
Right. It is a win-win situation, and we offer a free vegetarian starter kit, which is a vegan starter kit that has free recipes and information on the ethical benefits of a plant-based diet, but we also talk about the health benefits and the ethical benefits as well. There's a vegan food pyramid included and health and nutrition information. So listeners, if they're interested in receiving a free copy of the vegetarian starter kit, can go to mercyforanimals.org. They can order that, or they can go to chooseveg.com and view the online version. So we do offer information and resources about the health and environmental benefits of a plant-based diet, as well as practical tips and recipes and cooking videos to help people begin that journey.
Now, how did your family respond to your move to veganism and all that you've been involved with in the last decade?
My immediate family was rather supportive. My parents always supported my siblings and I to explore things that we were interested in, and in that sense we're very lucky. And my more extended family that were more involved in hunting and trapping and those issues weren't as supportive, to put it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, over time and leading by example and having conversations, it really has made a large impact. My sister is now a vegetarian. My father became vegan a number of years ago.
Yay.
So it's again, it speaks to that common decency that I think we all have, and really being a vegetarian and leading by that example, I think, can be so powerful and empowering for people around you.
Well, that's one of the most difficult things that people experience when they don't have the support of their family or their partner or their colleagues in the workplace, and they have all of these challenges when it comes to food. And so you're fortunate. Or sometimes,
yeah.
I think, I'm not entirely sure, but sometimes I think it has to do with the individual, that some of us are not really concerned about what other people think, and we just move forward doing what we believe in, and as a result, people accept what we're doing. And then others are more shy or don't like confrontation and have difficulty standing up for what they believe in, and as a result have more challenges, which is unfortunate.
Definitely. Our food choices are viewed as being very personal to each person. It's something that's deeply ingrained in our habits and mm-hmm. in our traditions, and it's something that people can be defensive about and people that don't want to be told what to do. But I think that it certainly is becoming more acceptable and more mainstream, and I think that we all should really lead by example and be joyful and show that having a vegetarian diet as part of who you are is not a sacrifice at all, but it is a way of enjoying a wide variety of foods and being thankful for the foods that you have and knowing that your diet is reflecting those deepest values that you have, and that no one is suffering or dying for those items, and that they're nurturing your own health and also the environment, and and really sharing that in a positive and joyful way with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as people see that from other vegetarians and vegans, the more likely they'll be to want to explore those options for themselves as well.
So are you celebrating Thanksgiving this year?
I will be celebrating Thanksgiving this year, yes.
Will it be a turkey-free Thanksgiving?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a turkey-free Thanksgiving for many years now. My my family, even my extended family, have decided that they can all forego meat for at least one meal. And they certainly have been exposed to all of the delicious alternatives that are out there.
Well, one meal a year is a beginning.
Absolutely.
Actually, most of us are vegan some point during the day. And it's just about doing it one step at a time.
Absolutely.
But it really isn't difficult. And that's the message that I'm always trying to put out, because people feel like they're going to be deprived. And there are certainly more and more delicious options in the freezer of the supermarket. I'm blessed. I live in New York City, and we have the best vegan restaurants of anywhere in the world, and so many of them, and so many different kinds of food. But there's so much variety. There's so much good food, and what I just want to do is get more healthy, delicious, plant-based food in people's mouths so that they can taste it and know that they're not going to be missing anything. Because, you know, I like to believe that there's good in all of us, but, you know, there's so many other different factors that are involved, our tradition, our culture, our behavior, our tastes, our desires, our addictions. And people need to know that they're not going to be missing anything.